When Jesus was a young lad, he turned to the scriptures of his time, the scriptures of the Hebrew people. And certainly later, as he struggled to create those stories, those parables that he told to teach, to lead, to guide, he turned to the scriptures that were available to him in his time. And it seems almost certain that he would have at some point turned to the psalm that we're going to share portions of this morning, Psalm 72. May the mountains bring prosperity to the people, the hills the fruit of righteousness. May he defend the afflicted among the people and save the children of the needy. May he crush the oppressor. May he endure as long as the sun, as long as the moon, through all generations. May he be like rain falling on a mown field, like showers watering the earth. For he will deliver the needy who cry out, the afflicted who have no one to help. He will take pity on the weak and the needy and save the needy from death. He will rescue them from oppression and violence, for precious is their blood in his sight. My first introduction to working in disaster recovery was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, many, many years ago, where the Quakers had organized an inner city mission program to which they invited and encouraged many groups from churches to come every weekend to spend their weekend working to help impoverished families maintain their homes, restore their homes. And this man, this Quaker man, David Ritchie, would spend Friday evening each weekend welcoming those groups and giving them an introduction to what it is that they would be about that weekend. And he always, always said to the volunteers, "You must know," he would say, "that it is your work that you will be doing this weekend that will make God's love visible to the people in inner city Philadelphia. It is your work that will make God's love visible." We are trying in Florida to do that very thing. We are trying to make God's love visible to the people whose lives are often decimated as people struggle following major disasters and some that don't seem so major to the rest of us, to try to recover some semblance of quality of life that existed before the winds or the floods came to visit them. As I mentioned in this morning's prayer, there are currently more than 16,000 families, households, who have applied to the federal government, to FEMA, for financial assistance for recovery from the damaging floods of Tropical Storm Debby now several months ago. Many of these families live in areas that are not designated as flood zones. Therefore, their homeowners' insurance didn't include flood damage. Their banks, their mortgage companies didn't require them to buy flood damage. And so with their normal homeowners' insurance, they thought they were well protected until the floods came and they discovered that normal homeowners insurance does not reimburse for damages done by flooding. And so of those over 16,000 families who applied for help, there will inevitably be more than 1,000, probably closer more like 1,600 families who, after they receive all the funding from FEMA, all the funding from their insurance that they're able to receive, will still be completely unable to restore their homes to the condition that existed before Debbie visited them. These families will need our help. They will need the help that comes not only from the United Church of Christ in Florida, but from many faith organizations that work together as partners to bring aid and assistance, to bring volunteer workers, to bring financial funds to purchase building materials, to enable the families to restore some semblance of life as they knew it before the floods. We are probably going to be working at helping those families recover for at least the next 3, more realistically, the next 5 years. There will be literally hundreds of crews of volunteer workers who will come to Florida, mostly from northern states, many from New England, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana. They will come in groups of 12, 15, 20, 25 volunteers. They will come as adults who take a week's vacation to give a week's work. They will come as youth groups with their leaders who give a week of their summertime. They will come as retired persons, quality crafts persons, who are willing to donate 1 week, 2 weeks, in some cases 6 months of their time to help the recovery effort. It does take time. 2 years ago, some of us discovered an elderly woman who lived with her learning disabled son, who was 52 years old. The two of them lived in a home in a rural area, an area that had been hit pretty hard by Hurricane Charley in 2004. Yes, that was 8 years ago. And 2 years ago, we discovered this woman and her son living in a home that had layer after layer after layer of blue tarps that one group after another attempted to put off the inevitable by adding still another tarp to her roof. Those tarps had weathered, they had disintegrated, and the rain still came into the home, a home which was filled with mold and mildew. The woman and her son lived in one room. They had some old plastic sheeting that they had stapled to try to ward off the impact of the mold and the mildew in the rest of the house, and they lived in that one room, slept there, ate there. When we learned about the woman's situation, we gathered some volunteers, and we went to her house, and a crew of volunteers who came to us from Myerstown, Pennsylvania. Some of you may know where that little town is located. It's somewhere between Harrisburg and Philadelphia. Small church. A group of 12 men, just happened that they were all men in that case, all of them skilled roofers, skilled craftspeople, took a week's vacation, and they came, and they worked. They stripped off layer after layer of those tarps and the pitch that had been applied to the holes in the tarp beneath each new one as it was added. They got the roof down to the plywood decking and discovered that much of it had deteriorated, and so they removed it and replaced it with with new, more currently coated plywood to that roof. They put the felt paper on top of the new decking, and they were in the midst of installing the new shingles on the fifth day of their work there, when the woman and her learning disabled son came walking down the road. They had obviously gone for some groceries. They were carrying a few bags. And as they approached their home, and as that learning disabled man looked up to the roof, it became obvious that this was really the first time he realized what was happening. And so he stopped. He looked at the workers, he looked at the roof, he set down the bags that he was carrying. And then the biggest smile you could ever believe appeared on his face. And he threw up his hands. And then he danced. He couldn't express appreciation. He couldn't tell what he was feeling using his words. But his body, his dance, showered all of us with the blessing of his gratefulness. That woman and her son had their home back, their life back. And it is because of all of us working together, all of our volunteers, all of our donations to buy the tarps, to buy the shingles, to buy the plywood decking. That woman has her home back, and her son smiles again. We are in the midst of a time when living with hurricanes and floods and tornadoes and other disasters is almost commonplace. So much so that for many of us, it's often more comfortable to just not think about it. I mean, we know it's there. But why get ourselves all concerned? Why get ourselves all tied up in knots? Why even bother to think about it? If it happens, when it happens, we'll do what we need to do. But why worry about it ahead of time? Well, way back when I was a young minister just starting out, I did some clinical training at a psychological center to learn how to do counseling, to be better equipped to help people struggle with some of the difficulties that life presents. And the teaching chaplain in that psychiatric center once said to us, "Life will be much easier to live if you make friends with what you fear." Life will be much easier to live if you make friends with what you fear. So planning and preparing for disasters, I believe, is important not only so that you can come through the disaster more safely, but so that you can live every day between now and then, if then ever happens, knowing that you have done what you need to do to put your mind at rest, to be okay with your level of readiness, So disaster ministry is for what we do to help others and for what we do to help ourselves. Following this service of worship in the hall, we will be presenting some additional information about how this ministry happens in the United Church of Christ in Florida and how your congregation specifically can participate and contribute. So I invite you to consider joining us for that presentation. It will not be a long presentation. We can do what we need to do to be prepared, and we can do what we can do to help others, to make God's love visible to others. Mother Teresa said this, "I am a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who is sending a love letter to the world." That's us. A little pencil in the hand of God who is writing a love letter to the world. Amen.